The Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA for $20 off your first purchase. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code MEDIA at FanDuel to play a risk-free tournament at up to $10.
I only yell out go on very special occasions. Part of my style is trying to identify the players every time he touches the ball by name. You know, sometimes it's easier than others, but I guess I have the gymnastics already of so many games and so many years that I feel comfortable enough calling a game off the screen. So I was really worn out, and you know, my emotions just really overflowed in that goal call. Honestly, I almost fainted.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their process. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Bette Marston. And this week, our guest is the Telemundo and NBC Sports broadcaster Andres Cantor. He has, of course, called countless soccer matches all over the world, including nearly every one of Mexico's national team matches that Telemundo has broadcast. He's called World Cups. He has hosted the Olympics for them. And he recently, or in fact this week as we're taping, just signed a contract extension with Telemundo that will keep him at that network through 2022. Big signing for them. Obviously, Andres Cantor, if you are a soccer fan, he really does not need any introductions. His goal calls are really globally known. Famously in this country, of course, Landon Donovan's goal against Algeria, Carly Lloyd's World Cup goal from midfield. That was another great Andres call. In this podcast, I want to get into his process, how he calls games actually between doing it in the studio off a monitor and being on site, because he does both and does both very, very well. I'd like to get into how he started in the business. He, if I believe this is correct, grew up in Argentina and then moved to the States when he was maybe 13 or 14 to Southern California, and then essentially taught himself English. So he's got a really unique, interesting story about how he became one of the more beloved soccer broadcasters in this country, and certainly in Mexico, and anyone that picks up Telemundo. All right, but Andres is in Miami at Telemundo's offices, so let's bring him in. Andres, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hi, Richard. How are you? Thank you for the podcast. Thank you for the interview and your time.
I appreciate it as well. First, Andres, how would you define your broadcasting style?
Very enthusiastic, I guess. Soccer is my life, is my passion, has always been since I was a little kid. I always say that soccer announcers are frustrated soccer players. In my case, I would have given anything in my life to play, 1 minute with my team, Boca Juniors in Argentina, or with the national team. I have the same enthusiasm that probably a player has every time it goes on the pitch. And that is the way I approach every game. It's like I'm playing it. Sometimes, when I call games off tube, I get so into it. Let's say it's a night game in Europe, which is the middle of the afternoon here, that when I finish, I pretend, or it seems to me that it's like, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and it's really only 4 o'clock. And that's how much I get into, sucked into the action of every soccer game.
I should know this, Andres. Boca Juniors plays in, I know the nickname is the Chocolate Box, and I've been in Buenos Aires, but for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of that stadium. It's you would know this. What is the name of that?
La Bombonera.
That's right. Okay, I remember.
The little candy box.
The little candy box. Okay. Yeah, that's very famous, obviously, in Buenos Aires. One of the And we'll get to your background in a little bit, because you were born in Argentina and then you moved to Southern California, I think, when you were a teenager, correct?
That is correct. My parents, both professionals. My dad is a gastroenterologist, now retired. My mother, a psychologist, now retired or semi-retired, still live in Los Angeles. And they moved away from Argentina during the dictatorship of the mid-1970s. So we moved to the States. I finished my last year in high school in San Marino High School out in L.A., then went on to USC, then started working directly with an Argentine publishing company that used to publish a weekly magazine just like yours, Sports Illustrated, called El Gráfico, which used to be very, very popular. So I started working as a correspondent for them until I got my chance of working in television when I was 23 back in 1987.
When you were in Argentina growing up, in basically primary school, did you learn English or was it totally Spanish speaking those schools?
No, I learned English about 3-4 years ago, really. I mean, I keep on learning it. I got here, I did take English classes while in Argentina. I thought I was well versed in English until I moved to the U.S. And I realized I had no clue. I mean, that they were teaching me something that I never understood, because I couldn't speak a word. I was pretty much speechless for about, I would say, a year and a half, 2 years, until I was able to feel a little bit more comfortable with the language and started speaking it. So I don't know how I graduated from high school, really. But it took me a good while to be fluent in English.
That's interesting, because obviously you graduated high school, you went to USC, so obviously you were able to figure out a way to be bilingual to the point where you could take your college classes. How difficult was that, and a lot of immigrants who've come to this country learn through ESL classes, learn through watching television, learn through talking English with their friends. What was the process for you?
Well, basically, when I moved, there was two parts to my immigration process, if you will, coming to America. We first moved to Sacramento. I lived there for about 6 to 7 months. I was really miserable there and went back to Argentina for almost a year, because they had promised that our green card was going to come out during the summer. I finished whatever grade it was in Sacramento. The summer vacation came around, and they told my dad, who, you know, was a doctor and was working at the time in California already, you know, let your kid go. You'll get the visa. We'll get the visa before the summer is over. And lo and behold, you know, it took almost a year, so I couldn't come back to the States. So in those 6-7 months up in Sacramento, I started, you know, at least listening to the music of the language. There I was really, really miserable. When I finally were able to come back, my family had moved to L.A., I went to San Marino High, as I said, which way back then, I was the only Hispanic kid in the school.
Wow.
So I was forced to speak in English with my teammates in the soccer, in the soccer team. And by then I was, you know, good enough at the language to write about the soccer games that I played on. Talk about a conflict of interest for my San Marino High School Titan newspaper. So you can imagine that I was, you know, always the best player in the game, kind of. So after high school, I was comfortable enough after that year in 1990. In high school, I was comfortable enough to tackle college. Class of, what did I say, 90? No, class of 80. I'm lost now. Yeah, class of 80. And in college, you know, some of the classes were tougher than the other ones. English literature where a couple of classes were very, very tough. I did the journalism curriculum. See, I can't say some words up to these days.
No, you nailed that.
It was very, very thorough. So I had to take everything from archaeology, which was, tough, to, English literature. So some classes were tougher than others. But then, within a couple of years, I started feeling much more comfortable in speaking, writing, and doing everything in English.
What position did you play in high school soccer?
I played center forward.
Center forward.
The last year, yes, I did.
So you have you're a striker at heart. You're a poacher.
Not really. I played. You asked a precise question. I answered very precisely in my last year of high school. Before I played every position possible, wherever they wanted me to play. The only position I didn't play regularly was goalkeeper, but I played as right fullback, center mid. I played as an outside midfielder, and then my last year of high school, I played as a center forward. When... That tells you that I wasn't, I guess, very good at any of the positions, so I didn't become mainstream in any other team that I played.
Did you, when you were playing, did you always try to envision yourself as playing as someone? So this would be, I think, late 70s, early 80s. So I'm trying to think of who you'd be watching on television, who you might try to emulate.
Well, in those days, soccer and television wasn't that popular as it is today. But obviously, when I grew up in Argentina playing, four times a week, I emulated my heroes from Boca Juniors. I had their posters in the wall. I bought their jerseys back then. It seems like I'm talking about the prehistoric world, but they didn't have the names engraved, but they had the numbers. In Argentina, at least, the teams played from 1 to 11. You always knew who number 5 was or number 7. So, if you had the number 7 jersey from your team, people knew that you had bought it because of that player. So I had my, my heroes from Boca Juniors. And then here in high school, I really don't remember, Kempes, Mario Kempes, right, the goals striker from Argentina that had won the 1978 World Cup, was a big hero of mine back in my high school days. So pretty much when I played striker, I always thought I was scoring as he was.
Yeah, and now he's an ESPN broadcaster, or at least he has been, I believe.
He is. Right. He is. He is. He worked for ESPN in Spanish. Yes.
As specific as you can, how do you prepare for a match that you're going to call?
Well, nowadays it's much easier because of the wealth of information available through the internet from pretty much any country of the world. So basically, in the good old days, let me give you like a twofold answer chronologically. In the good old days, and not something that I wouldn't want to do now, but I unfortunately don't have that much availability to go out on the field, and since we cover soccer games from all over the world. But before, when we used to do one game a week, you would go out in the field, watch training, talk to players, talk to coaches at will, when it was different than today, that you go to a Real Madrid training session, and if you don't have a prearranged interview, nobody will talk to you, and they only let you see 20 minutes of training. In the good old days, it used to be easier, so we have a lot of access to players, coaches. We saw trainings. Nowadays, with the internet, you try to get as much information on the teams that you're going to broadcasting in terms of factual information about the players, etc. And also, the advantage of today's world is that I can tape, and watch film of the teams that I will be broadcasting. So I get to prepare mentally how a player plays, what position He feels more comfortable playing if, you know, they switch him around, who takes the corner kicks, who takes the PKs, etc. For example, I'm doing the Guatemala-Trinidad game, and I watched them. I called them for my radio company during the Gold Cup, so I have my notes, my old paper notes, nothing very techie. I have all my notes written from that game, and I, you know, went back and studied the game of Chicago, I think it was. So, you know, I'm prepared for tonight's match, and I called three or four games a weekend, and I get a wealth of information through the internet, and reading absolutely everything related to the specific games and to soccer in general.
How many games on the whole would you call in a given year? Let's say it's not a World Cup year.
Sure. Probably an average of, I would say, 150 at least.
Wow.
Yeah, I have as many as five or four on a given weekend. Two as a minimum, so times 52. Let's say we don't do 52, but mostly because of the different leagues that we cover, it's probably 40 to 45 weeks. So that's an average of probably anywhere between 120 to 150.
And then in terms of those games, how many of those games would you be on site versus calling from a monitor?
Unfortunately, to my liking, I mean, and I'm grateful that I get to do four big games on a weekend, and that obviously makes it impossible for me to be on site at every game. Usually, we are on site. For example, I will be on site this Tuesday in San Pedro Sula when Honduras plays at home against Mexico. So we usually go on site for the big games. I'm talking about, you know, Telemundo, for the World Cups, which I've done the last four for my radio company, Football de Primera. I've been on site in every single game, and for radio, when I do games, you know, for radio, I'm on site in every game. I don't call any radio games off tube. So during the Gold Cup, I call, you know, the games on site, etc.
It's interesting because when I put out that I was going to speak to you for the podcast, there were a number of people who seemed to be very interested in how you call games off a monitor, and that's a, you know, obviously an interesting skill and probably not as preferable, of course, as being there. So could you give the listeners a sense of, if you are in, let's say, the Miami studios and you're calling a game off a monitor, you're not there, how do you approach it prior to the game, and then how do you approach it during the game?
Basically, people have to know that whatever they're watching, it's exactly the same thing that I'm watching. I don't have an extra feed that or a support feed of the game. Whatever comes out of the screen in their TV homes is exactly the same thing I'm seeing while I'm calling the game. And obviously, it gives you a limited vision, but then sometimes it gives you, you know, the power to make the right call, because sometimes it has happened to me. And with this, I'm not saying that I prefer doing games watching a monitor, but, you know, sometimes in big stadiums, if we don't have, you know, the replay readily available, or it, you know, it passes me, you know, because my eyesight in the stadium is fixated on the field. And sometimes if the producer doesn't tell me in my earpiece, replay coming up, you know, I miss it. And then I don't know whether it was a penalty, whether the foul was inside the box, outside the box. So that is the advantage that you get by calling games off tube, a little bit more precision. But then it gives you less perspective of everything that is going on. And that is the toughest part, because you cannot, you know, see what is going on outside of the picture frame that the director is giving you. So my preparation, basically, I have my eye trained already for the screen. I know what to watch other than the player that has the ball. Sometimes I get blindsided by, you know, players flying on the screen coming from the backside, let's say, that weren't in my radar, if you will, and, you know, it catches you by surprise. But usually I'm trying to see the movement of everyone off the ball while fixating my eyesight on the player that has the ball and that player next to him that is probably marking him. So it's a challenge. You have to be really sharp and on edge to be able to identify the players. I mean, one of my, I wouldn't say trademarks, but part of my style is trying to identify the players every time he touches the ball by name. So, you know, sometimes it's easier than others, but I guess I have the gymnastics already of so many games and so many years that I feel comfortable enough calling a game off the screen.
Because you're calling games off the screen, is Miami your home base? Does that mean that you have to be close to the...
Yes.
Okay, that would make sense. Do you...
Miami's home, yes.
All right, it'd be fantastic weather. You can't beat that.
No.
In terms of... have you thought, Andres, about why you have connected with the American public? Why the American public, in particular, really enjoys your goal calls?
Basically, I believe, Richard, that it has to do with the enthusiasm. My job caught attention of the mainstream media when I did the first World Cup in 1990 for SIN, Spanish International Network. I remember the New York Times wrote the piece, CNN came over the studios to do a piece, and then it took off in 1994 after I called every single game of the World Cup played in the USA. And I don't want to say it became a fad because of the way I yelled goal, which obviously was the reason why I got, you know, the notoriety that I got, obviously, because of the goal call. But I remember, and I was very, everyone that did pieces on my work during the 1994 World Cup were very gracious to recognize that I was much more than just the goal call, that I was a well-prepared soccer enthusiast, that I know the game, that I know the players, that I had taken the time to call the embassies of Bulgaria to ask how, you know, to pronounce the 22 players that were coming over to play the World Cup, that I had as much information as I had on each broadcast, that I knew the game, or at least I think I know the game, and that I had the same level of enthusiasm when I did Cameroon-Russia than when I did either a Mexico game or a U.S. national team game. And I think people realize that, and that is why I think my style of work was well accepted since way back then.
You're listening to the terrific football broadcaster, Andres Cantor. Let's take a quick break for a second, and we'll be back on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. The sports we watch have certainly changed drastically over the last couple decades, but the essential nature of fans is still the same. We appreciate and love the athleticism and competition at the highest level. So the next time you head for a stadium or an arena, use the SeatGeek app to find the best deals on tickets. Now my listeners can get a rebate check for $20 when they use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, in the SeatGeek app. Here's how it works. You download the SeatGeek app on your iPhone or Android. It's free and takes less than a minute to download. Then you search for the event, find a great deal, enter our code MEDIA, and when you complete your purchase, SeatGeek will send you a $20 check to your house. It's that easy. SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers online, shows you the best deals automatically. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket available for your event, all on one page. They rank every available ticket with a deal score. They show you a color-coded map that's easy to find. And finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. Store your credit card, and when you find a ticket you want to buy, make the purchase with just two quick taps of your phone. There's no faster way to buy tickets. So, to redeem your promo code and get your $20 check, download the free SeatGeek app today
Enter promo code MEDIA in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. For the NFL, college football, for the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app, and don't forget to enter our code MEDIA.
Okay, back with, I like the fact that you referenced that you call embassies, because when I talked to Ian Dark, he had told me the same thing. So in my lax preparation here, I should have asked you if it's Andres or Andres to pronounce your first name.
Well, in Spanish, it's Andres.
Right.
But I've been, obviously, everyone calls me Andres. It's totally accepted. It has an accent on the E.
All right, so I'm going to give my 4 years of Spanish. I'll try Andres and see if it keeps up, but the lax part of my Spanish will mi poquito will eventually drop. We were talking about the goal call, and in doing my research on you, let me know if I'm correct about this, but this is essentially you're paying homage, or you first came across this kind of goal call by listening to Jose Maria Munoz calling this kind of style in Argentina?
He wasn't the only one either. I will tell you how this all came about. I always said that I did not invent anything. I just, I guess, helped popularize, you know, the goal call, because Jose Maria Munoz was the Dick Vitale, the Chick Hearn, the Vince Coley. Everyone rolled into one major radio soccer announcer when I grew up in Argentina. Everyone listened to that man. I'm talking about the days that television wasn't as impactful and as mainstream as it is today. And he used to call it that way. And I used to, go to the stadium with my old portable transistor radio fixed, glued to my ear. And I used to listen to the games, the away games called by him. Everyone listened to him. And every other soccer announcer that was out there called the goals the same way. So I was brought up in that style of play-by-play, very energetic, enthusiastic, with the anchor being, the goal. So it's I don't know if it's an homage or not, but certainly he obviously influenced what I am today as a broadcaster, because he was the very first play-by-play announcer that I listened to for many years.
In terms of getting some added popularity in the U.S., how much do you give credit to your appearances on the David Letterman show? Because I remember just how much Letterman seemed to love your calls. He played them repeatedly. And then, if I'm correct about this, I think you were a guest on the show a couple of times, too.
Yes, I was a guest in 94. I was a guest in 98. David Letterman obviously was very gracious to invite me. I didn't know whether he was kidding or not up to this day, but I guess he did enjoy it. I made him yell out a goal with me, so that was fun. I was with, Kathy Lee and Regis. I did all sorts of media appearances, especially during 1994. So that obviously helped tremendously to get across to the mainstream general market audience that perhaps didn't know my work in Spanish.
Is it? I'll sort of see if hopefully I can sort of phrase this question the right way. But does it ever feel like a double-edged sword of sorts, Andres, in that people love the goal call, they love the passion, they recognize it. But you also don't want to be a circus performer coming on every radio show, interview, television show, and just screaming out a goal call. So I guess my question would be, how do you manage those two things, that you are known for this, but at the same time, you don't want to become a cliche?
I'm going to give you a factual story that happened with the first time that I got invited to the David Letterman show. And you are totally right, because I totally opposed. I only yell out go on very special occasions, and especially if within my network they ask me to, and it has to be yelled out just coldly and into the open. So don't expect me in this podcast to yell out go.
No, that, but, out of respect, I would not ask you, to be honest.
But when I got called into Letterman during the 94 World Cup, Richard, it was my first day off in about, I don't know, probably 45 days because of all the prep work that I was doing. And again, I called all 64 games of that World Cup. So when the very first day off came, I needed to, you know, catch up on my sleep. I needed to rest my voice. And I said to my agent, I said to my, you know, my PR people at Univision back then, guys, exactly what you said. You know, this is great, but I don't want to go out and just go out, you know, start yelling goal. I don't want to be one of his, you know, tricks on the show. And they explained to me, you know, the importance and that they were going to have footage of the games to reenact the play and call it live, et cetera, et cetera. So then, you know, I finally, I guess, budged and accepted and went on his show. But I seldomly yell out goal on any other interview. It has to be a must situation, but it's really rarely that I do.
I appreciate you answering that. There are two goal calls in particular that I think people in the States must come up to you all the time and ask you about. And I would just love to get your reflections of the moment, because your emotions for these goals were out of sight. One, obviously, is Landon Donovan's goal for the U.S. against Algeria. And then the most recent one was Carly Lloyd's, you know, half-field launch where she went over the goalie and you lost it. It was an amazing goal, but your call for that goal was sensational. So do you, especially with English-speaking U.S. audiences, do you get asked about those two goals a lot? Because I imagine you do.
I do. Thanks for your opinion on those two calls, which I really have a story behind it. I mean, I was really surprised. As I told you, the last four World Cups, I called for my radio company, Football de Primera, on radio. The Landon Donovan call was on radio. And the amount of attention that it had really amazed me, amazed everyone, because it wasn't a television call, it was a radio call. I know Landon personally. My company used to organize the Honda player. Well, we still, now we call it the Football de Primera player of the year, but way back in 1991, when nobody knew anything about the U.S. national team, my company with my partner Alejandro Goodman decided to create what became the Honda Player of the Year Award, which recognized the best player in the U.S. National team. Landon happened to have won it like six times, I believe, before, or seven, I don't know how many times. So we had an event every year, and I knew Landon, I know Landon, and the fact that it was him made it that more special. The fact that it was, you know, if you remember how the play evolved,
right?
Algeria almost scored on the very last play before Landon's goal. That would have put the U.S. out of the World Cup in the first round. And then in the counterattack, you had Landon's terrific run of, you know, 60, 70 yards with Josie and Dempsey involved, and then Landon pushing it in. So, I mean, I gave it really all out. I was like, it was a very intense game from what it meant to the U.S. national team. So I was really worn out. And, you know, my emotions just really overflowed in that goal call. Honestly, I almost fainted.
Wow.
I remember I had Bora Milutinovic, former U.S. national team coach in 94, and Marcelo Balboa as my two color commentators at the stadium that night. And, you know, they were taken obviously by emotion as well. So if I wouldn't, you know, I almost really fainted because I was so much out of breath. So that's that story. And then the Carly Lloyd's goal, it's probably because it was one of the most beautiful goals ever scored on that type of platform, regardless of genre, this is the final of the World Cup, and you have a player that scored a 50-yard goal from midfield. I mean, this is terrific. And there's another story behind that. I was in Santiago, Chile, the night before, calling the Argentina-Chile Copa America final. I whisked away right after Alexis Sanchez scored the penalty kick to the airport to catch a flight to Dallas. Then I flew to Vancouver. I was like exhausted by having done all the Copa America games on radio, by the 17-hour flight, by the time zone difference. I got to my hotel, I believe, at 10 o'clock in the morning or 10:30 in the morning, and we left to the stadium, I believe, at noon.
Wow.
So I caught like a 1.5-hour nap. So I was like, it was fun for me to be there in Vancouver. Honestly, I didn't know for a while, you know, where in the heck I was. And then the game started, and it really woke me up and caught my attention. And Carly's goal was, I think it's going to win goal of the year at the Ballon d'Or January 11th or 12th, whenever it is.
I think so. That's some rock. That's like a rock star travel schedule there, Andres, flying 17 hours like that. That's very impressive. One thing that comes up for me in the stories that you just told was, do you call soccer differently when you are calling on the radio versus television? And if so, how is it different?
It's different in the sense that in television, you have the images and the pictures that go with your play-by-play commentary, so you don't have to be as descriptive. You still have to have the same energy and enthusiasm. In radio, I have to pretend that people are not watching the TV, even though many people perhaps are, you know, trying to pair my radio play-by-play with the TV images. But I have to pretend that whoever is listening on my app or on the, you know, my stations are not watching the game. So I have to be that much more descriptive. I put it into fifth gear. You know, if on television I'm calling play-by-play in third gear, on radio I call it in fifth, sometimes in sixth gear. I really go at a faster pace. And that is the difference between the two.
It's, you mentioned before the company that you co-own, Football de Primera. And so if I'm correct about this, not only are you a broadcaster, obviously, but you are an entrepreneur as well. And is the business that you and your partner have the Spanish language radio rights to a lot of soccer matches around the globe, including the World Cup, and then you sell those rights to radio stations globally?
Not globally. We have the U.S. Rights in Spanish for the World Cups since 2002, all the way through 2022. The company also owns the Mexican national team matches, the Copa Centenario, the Copa America, basically the best soccer tournaments we have owned in the last 27 years that we have been in business. And we do not sell the games. We offer them to our, we make a syndicate network and offer them to different radio stations across the U.S. And we sell the network advertisement at a national level. And in the last World Cup, I think we were 120 some stations that took our broadcast of Brazil 2014.
Wow. Have you noticed that as you've been in the business, as the years have continued, especially with the World Cup, that the interest broadcasting-wise for soccer programming has grown and grown significantly?
Well, in the Hispanic world, there's always interest around the World Cup, but obviously every 4 years, and obviously I'm biased when I say this, I always tell everyone, if they ask me today, you know, remember that this country will be mad about World Cup when, you know, the 2018 World Cup month comes around. And I think I find that there is a greater appetite and there is much more awareness and people are more hungry for consuming everything that has to do with the World Cup, generally in the mainstream general market media or market. The numbers of the television broadcast for English language have been terrific. The Women's World Cup, they're great. So I think there's a greater audience every 4 years for all the World Cup-related tournaments.
We have a great fantasy football show here in the SI Network. It's hosted by Michael Beller. The SI Fantasy Football Podcast comes out twice a week, and it has a very specific purpose: to help you win your fantasy league and get bragging rights over your buddies. If your team hasn't performed like you'd hoped, if your best players are injured, Daily Fantasy gives you another chance for a winning season. If you're curious about what Daily Fantasy is and you want to try it for yourself, go to FanDuel.com, enter my code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and you're guaranteed to get your money back in your account if you don't win. FanDuel is the best place to play a one-week fantasy football game. Building a team is easy and fun. Just pick your players and stay under the salary cap. Entry fees start at just $1, so there's a league for everyone. The NBA and the NHL are here as well, so you can play fantasy sports for basically any night of the week if you want to attempt that. FanDuel is not just for huge tournaments. You could also set up private leagues, play against your friends anytime, anywhere. It's a great way to keep up with your buddies who don't live close by. Now, over 2 million players have already won money on FanDuel. Now it's your turn to get started. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and sign up now. Here's a great new offer for our listeners. If you enter a league and you don't win, FanDuel will refund your money. That's any contest you want, up to $10. You can sign up on FanDuel.com using my code MEDIA, then make a deposit, choose your league. If you don't win, you'll get that money right back in your FanDuel account. The only way to get this no-lose offer is to go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone, and use my code MEDIA. That's FanDuel.com, where it can finally pay to be a fan. FanDuel.com. Try it out today.
Do you have an assignment at this point yet for the Rio Olympics? And if so, what is it?
We are working on it as we speak. I know I'm going to be calling the soccer games for sure. Most likely I will do as I did in London, Beijing, and Athens, be the host of the whatever number of hours that we will have in Telemundo and NBC Universal, which is our cable channel. I will be the host a la Bob Costas, if you will, which I did in the last previous Olympics. So those are the preliminary plans. We're just, you know, finishing up exactly the assignments for next year.
So that assignment, if I'm correct, Andres, that goes beyond soccer, correct? That is that's the host of the entire production?
Correct.
Okay.
Probably because of the so many hours that we will have, I will not be hosting all the hours of coverage, most likely prime time, if I'm not, you know, out there calling a soccer game, but I will probably be the main host of the most important and relevant parts of our Olympic coverage.
Do you enjoy the, I wouldn't call it a break, but do you enjoy doing something that is different than what we primarily know you for? Because one of the key components of that job, obviously, is it's multiple sport, but it's not just multiple sports sometimes. It could involve politics. It could involve history. The Costas, quote unquote, Costas role oftentimes goes beyond what is in front of us in terms of the sporting plane.
It does. And it's obviously, I wouldn't say challenging, but it has, I have to prepare totally different because I'm not in touch with the day-to-day happenings of, you know, every other sport, but I have to be aware of what is going on. Obviously, if I'm going to be the host or just a traffic cop, if you will, even though I will not be involved in play-by-play, I can't just read a teleprompter and say, you know, now let's go to the possibility of Michael Phelps making history. I need to have some background information on exactly what is it I am presenting, even though I will not be doing the play-by-play, because as you say, There are moments of chit-chat, either with an expert or, you know, there might be a chance where I have to say something, so I need to be thoroughly prepared. So I try to do my preparation as much as I can once I know exactly what the schedule will be. And obviously, it's a different role altogether. I enjoy it in the sense that it gives me something different to do other than calling the games themselves.
You recently signed a contract extension with Telemundo that will keep you at that network for many years to come. Why has it worked for you at that network?
Basically, I believe, first, that we're a big family. Most of the key people here at Telemundo Sports, we all worked together for many, many years here and in Univision. I did my part. I was part of the team that got us the rights in one way or another, and I thought it was just proper for me to be around, if the network thought so, to be around as their main play-by-play for the World Cups of 2018 and 2022. It was an easy decision in one way, but you know, luckily I had the possibility of doing other things, which also seduced me. But at the end, I decided to you know, do it in my home, in my home base, which is Miami, my native language, and with a team that I trust as the best sports team in sports production in the Hispanic market, which is my extended Telemundo family. So I'm very grateful. I know that, I don't know, but I know it's perhaps not customary for a network to, you know, to give such a lengthy contract to a talent. I am more than grateful for the trust that Telemundo has given me in signing me or extending my contract all the way through the 22 World Cup.
All right, a couple more here with Andres Cantor. Andres, in terms of thinking about how long you want to call soccer, do you have some kind of number in mind, whether it's an age, whether it's a goal, or do you approach, you know, just the fact, too, you have to obviously protect your voice. You have to make sure that the voice stays as strong and as rich as possible. But do you have an idea of how long you ultimately would like to go in terms of calling games?
Honestly, I don't. I'm going to be 53 in December. I feel great. Every time I have 3 days off, I don't know what to do. You know, I start climbing the walls. I mean, I have, you know, plenty of things to do, but then, you know, you get that edge. If it's not one of those long-awaited vacations that, you know, after a very tough year, if let's say I have 3 days off and obviously we go out with my wife, you know, my kids are both up in New York in college, so we're empty nesters, you know, and there's always a soccer game on, so I end up watching soccer. If you tell me go to the movies, you know, I always fight with my wife. She says, let's go to the movies. And she, you know, she knows, I mean, she has been with me for 26 years now. So she knows that if there's any chance of me going to the movies, it has to be on a day that there's no soccer on TV, which nowadays it's very rarely. So I don't even want to start thinking about it. As you mentioned, I just extended my contract. I just hope I'm healthy by 22. And I will have my options then. By the end of 22, I will be 60. So we'll talk again at the end of 2022. But I'm not foreseeing that as the end of my broadcasting career whatsoever. It's way too early to start thinking about that.
Have you, in terms of thinking about an assignment that you have yet to do yet that you've always wanted to do, whether it's just a totally different sport that you think would just be interesting, is there anything out there that you would just love to, for even if it was a one-off, a one-time assignment that you would love to do just to see what it was like?
Here at Telemundo, when I first moved from Univision, I did a series of in-depth interviews outside of the soccer world with singers. Basically, there were four very well-known pop artists at the time. I really admire, I mean, I watch a lot of television and I admire, I really like shows. I would like to do perhaps, you know, an Anthony Bourdain type of show where it revolves around, you know, soccer. The traveling revolves around soccer and not food like he does. I really enjoy, I mean, I think it's a great television show, the pre, half, and post games that TNT does for the NBAs. I just got, believe it or not, I picked up the newspaper the other day and I saw that in the book fair that they're having in Miami this weekend, Ted Koppel is going to be here. Yeah. I mean, he was one of my idols growing up. I'm sorry. I'm already grown up. growing up in the business, if you will. I watched Nightline religiously as I watched Jon Stewart up to the very last show that he did. And I just got, you know, so emotional by seeing him that I am, you know, going to try to go and see if I, you know, grab a selfie with him or meet him, because that is the type of work that I'd love to do. You know, the shows I watched or that I watched that gave me ideas of things that I would like to do and be like people that I be like the people that I respect the most in the industry.
That's interesting. And I think a Bourdain show like the revolving around soccer and travel could actually be really, really interesting, because that show is well done. It's well shot in particular.
And very well shot.
Yeah, and seems to be very popular. All right, the last one for you, Andres, and we really appreciate your time, would be, of all the matches that you've called over the years, is there one particular match that stands out for you in terms of that was a broadcast that, I mean, no broadcaster ever really thinks they had the perfect broadcast, but is there one for you that really stands out above the rest, whether it was something that happened on the pitch or just because you thought this was kind of emblematic of the kind of sports broadcast I want to be part of?
It's very tough pinpointing one. I really remember, I will give you a couple, and they're all from the same World Cup, which was 1994. You have to understand that the final was played in my backyard, which San Marino, where I lived and I finished high school, is about 15 minutes from the Rose Bowl. So I was like a little kid. I had so much emotion going into that World Cup. I was looking forward for that World Cup to position the game here in America as it was positioned all over the world. That the very first game in Soldier Field between Germany and Bolivia, after having prepped myself and after having anxiously awaited the beginning of the World Cup, I thought that was like, you know, like it's like when you study for a final back in college and, you know, you didn't sleep for 3 days and then you went and took the final and there was a huge sigh of relief, but it wasn't just the same relief. It was just satisfaction. Hmm. It was gratefulness that the World Cup had already started. And actually the broadcast came out very good. And then every other game of that World Cup, you know, my work was getting attention, which meant that the game was getting attention. Back in 1994, people that listen to podcasts nowadays, you know, probably weren't around in 1994. There were not as many television networks that showed soccer. There were not many outlets in written media. There was no internet. There was no satellite. So all of a sudden, you would turn on ABC, CBS, even PBS, and everyone was talking about the World Cup. And, you know, day three, somebody had got a clip of my goal call, and they were talking about the game. And I was like, wow, you know, like that old cigarette advertisement. What was the punchline? The Virginia Slims. We come a long way, baby.
Yeah, you've come a long way, right.
Whatever it was. And I really felt that way. And then by the time we called the final at the Rose Bowl between Italy and Brazil, even though the game didn't help much, I mean, that was really like the most memorable. I don't know if that was the most memorable game of the World Cup. I remember the U.S. against Colombia match when Ernie Stewart scored what turned out to be the winning goal that put the U.S. through to the next round.
Right.
That game still is in my heart as one of my best goals. And the World Cup final of 94 is probably the one I'm going to cherish the most as, you know, being the end of a terrific World Cup in the USA.
Our guest has been the Telemundo host and, of course, football broadcaster Andres Cantor. He's called countless soccer matches all over the world, including most, if not all, of Mexico's national team matches that Telemundo has aired. As he mentioned here, he's just signed a contract extension that will take him with that network through 2022. You'll see him on their coverage of the Olympics. Obviously, you will see him on their coverage of soccer as well. Andres, it's been a real pleasure to have this conversation with you. We wish you the best of health and continued success. Thank you very much for being part of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. And it was a great conversation. I listened to many of your podcasts. You do a great job, and hopefully our paths will cross very soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Checks in the mail, too, for that PR. I appreciate that, Andres. Thank you very much. Okay, back in the studio as we wrap up after Andres Cantor, we thank him for his time. Kind of amazing to me, Beth, that he almost fainted during the Landon Donovan call. That was a pretty good reveal. And he's an interesting guy. I mean, you know, truly an incredibly successful second-generation success story in America. Family came over. He maybe, you know, he's born in Argentina, comes to the States, and learns English essentially on his own, and becomes one of the more successful soccer broadcasters in this country. Interesting guy, and great for Telemundo, and certainly great for Andres, for them re-signing him through 2022.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's absolutely fascinating that he didn't fully know English until just a few years ago. Like, I mean, it must have been, some people are language people, some people aren't. I'm not a language person, so I always find it fascinating when other people pick up on languages, you know, and become essentially fully fluent. I was also laughing at how he said, you know, in high school and college, some classes were tougher than others. Well, I, you know, as a journalist, I feel that way for many of my classes as well. I mean, I remember I took like a cognitive brain science class or something in college. It was not, definitely was not an easy class. It was not one of the better choices I made in college. But yeah, you know, I think it, he's really built up his brand at Telemundo and as a soccer commentator. And I think his background is fascinating. I think his family is fascinating. He had no journalists in his family either. You know, both his parents were physicians, I believe you said.
I think his dad was a physician. His mom was a
psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist.
Right. So, yeah, I think he's a very interesting person. So,
psychology. Yeah, no, I agree. Soccer broadcasters, to me, when you interview them, are really interesting. We interviewed Ian Dark earlier this year, and I found that conversation really, really interesting. And probably part of the reason is they're just global people. So they travel the world. They experience different things. They have to interact with people of different cultures. And soccer, obviously, is a global game, maybe the most global game of all. So Cantor
has had incredible success in this country. And the last thing I would just say before we wrap up is, I understand one of the questions I was really glad he answered and I asked Bet was that I'm glad he addressed the whole idea of the goal call because it's a signature thing, but you don't want to kind of be like a trained monkey sort of doing this trick for everybody. So he gave a really interesting answer. Like, you know, when I have to do it for promotional purposes or if it's a big spot, you know, Letterman, Good Morning America, well, probably for his sake, Today's Show, I'll do it. But I'm not going on every interview doing it. And that was interesting to me because you know that so many people basically who have him on, they just want him to scream that call.
Right. He's very soccer commentators are all very passionate. We found that with Dark. We found that with Cantor. And he doesn't want to make that call unless the moment calls for it. And I respect that about him.
Or his marketing department calls
for
it.
PR
department.
Well, yeah. But, you know, he doesn't take it lightly.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. All right. Thank you very much for the great feedback for this podcast, as always, from the Jim Miller podcast to Bomani Jones, Katie Nolan, Jalen Rose, Jeff Van Gundy, who was a very, very fun conversation. That was Alan Kim producing that. Bet, good to see you're back in the saddle here.
Come on. I don't work on Tuesdays during NFL season. You know that.
Good point. So we'll continue to get good guests as we head past Thanksgiving. I'm sort of working on some good bookings, but I'm pretty excited. I think we're going to have some people you are really interested. And again, if you want to check out old podcasts, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. It's the SI Media Podcast on all of those, including iTunes, if you want to check that out. And you can go back. It seems like people are listening to some old episodes, which is pretty exciting and very cool. All right, so my thanks to Andres Cantor of Telemundo and NBC Sports. Thank you to Bette Marston, my producer. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.